Welcome back, everyone, to another deep dive. Today, we're going to unpack a case that's all about estate planning, you know, wills, trusts, and all that. But this one has a really interesting twist involving something called a power of appointment.
It's a fascinating concept. Think of it like a special key that unlocks a portion of an estate and lets someone decide where those assets go.
And that someone isn't necessarily the person who originally owned the assets, right?
Right. The original owner, through their will or trust, can give someone else this power to control those assets after they're gone.
So it's a way to give someone else a say in how things are handled after you're gone. But in this case, Beals v. State Street Bank, something went wrong with that power of appointment, didn't it?
You could say that. It all started back in 1904 with a man named Arthur Hunnewell, who was setting up a trust for his family.
Okay, so far so good. It sounds like a typical estate planning scenario. What happened next?
Well, Arthur gave one of his daughters, Isabella, a power of appointment over her share of the trust, but there was a catch.
What kind of catch?
It only kicked in if she died without children.
That makes sense. He probably wanted to ensure his direct descendants were taken care of. So if Isabella had kids, they would automatically inherit her share. But if not, then she had the power to decide where it went.
Exactly. Now, initially, Isabella had what's called a general power of appointment.
So she could choose anyone to inherit that portion of the trust. No restrictions.
That's right. She had complete freedom. But here's where things get interesting. In 1944, she decided to change things up a bit. She partially released her power, limiting it to only her descendants.
So instead of having this wide open choice, she narrowed it down. It's like she put a special lock on that key so it could only open a specific door.
That's a great analogy. She went from a general power to a special power. Now jump ahead to 1968. Isabella dies, sadly without any children. And in her will, she leaves her residuary estate, meaning everything left after specific gifts to his sister Margaret's descendants.
Hold on a second. She restricted her power of appointment to her own descendants, but her will leaves things to her sister's descendants. Those two things seem to contradict each other. How did the court make sense of that?
That's the heart of the legal battle. The Massachusetts court had to decide if Isabella's residuary clause, which basically distributes the leftovers of her estate, actually activated her power of appointment, even though she had limited it years earlier.
So the question was, did that residuary clause act as a key to unlock that specific portion of the trust? Sounds like a tough call. What did Massachusetts law say about this?
Well, Massachusetts has a rule that if you have a general residuary clause, it's presumed to exercise any general power of appointment you might have unless you say otherwise in your will.
So that presumption makes things straightforward if you have a general power. But remember, Isabella changed her power. It was no longer general. It was limited to her own descendants. How did the court deal with that wrinkle?
And that's where the case gets particularly interesting. The Massachusetts court decided to extend that presumption. They said, even though Isabella's power was limited, her residuary clause still activated her power of appointment.
So they were essentially saying, we think this is what Isabella intended, even if it wasn't perfectly spelled out. But wait, didn't Isabella live in New York? Why was a Massachusetts court deciding what happened to her estate?
Another great question. It comes down to what's called the donor's domicile rule. Since Arthur, the guy who set up the trust, lived in Massachusetts, that state's law governed the whole thing, including how to handle this power of appointment issue.
So it doesn't matter where Isabella lived. Her father's residency in Massachusetts when he created the trust made all the difference.
Exactly. And this rule is super important for preventing conflicting rulings. Can you imagine the legal mess if every state had a different interpretation of Arthur's trust?
That would be chaos. So this donor's domicile rule helps ensure everyone's playing by the same rules, even if family members live in different states. This whole case is really highlighting how important the details are in estate planning. What other legal surprises should we be aware of?
Well, one of the biggest takeaways here is how crucial clear drafting is in wills and trusts. Especially when powers of appointment are involved, you have to spell out exactly what you want to happen with those assets. Don't leave any room for guesswork.
It sounds like you can't be too careful when it comes to these legal documents. Every word matters. But what if someone's dealing with an older will or trust that might not have the benefit of all these legal nuances we're talking about?
If there's any doubt or anything seems unclear, the best advice is always to consult with an experienced estate planning attorney. They can help you untangle the legal jargon, figure out which state laws apply, and make sure everything's in order.
Sound advice. It seems like having an expert in your corner can really make a difference in these situations. This whole discussion has been an eye-opener, revealing all the complexities lurking beneath the surface of something as seemingly simple as a will.
And we've only just scratched the surface. What's really fascinating is that this case, Beals v. State Street Bank, shows a larger shift in how courts approach estate law. They're moving away from rigid rules and paying more attention to what individuals actually intended.
That sounds like a significant trend. So instead of getting bogged down in legal technicalities, courts are trying to get to the heart of what people wanted. But how exactly are they doing that? And what does it mean for folks navigating the world of estate planning?
We'll dive deeper into that in the next part of our deep dive. It's really interesting when you think about it. For a long time, the legal world kind of treated the law as this big, unchanging set of rules.
Like a giant instruction manual.
Exactly. Judges would just take those rules and apply them, you know, by the book to each case.
No room for interpretation.
Yeah.
But you're suggesting that things are starting to change.
Yeah. It's pretty fascinating to see, actually. We're seeing this shift toward what's called a more purposive approach to interpreting the law, especially in areas like estate law, where what someone intended really matters.
So instead of getting hung up on, like, the exact wording of the law, courts are digging a little deeper, trying to figure out the spirit of the law, what it was meant to achieve.
That's a great way to put it. And it makes sense when you're dealing with things like wills and trusts and these powers of appointment. Think about it. These documents are often written years, even decades, before they actually come into play.
Right. And so much can change in that time.
Yeah.
How people talk, what they value, even how families work. Something that seemed super clear back then might be totally confusing now.
It's almost like trying to decipher a message in a bottle, you know? It's been tossed around for years, the words are still there, but the context has completely changed.
Perfect analogy. And that's what courts are wrestling with, right? They're realizing they need to look beyond just the surface. They have to consider what was happening when the document was created, try to piece together what the person really meant.
Exactly. So in Beals v. State Street Bank, the court realized that sticking to a rigid interpretation of Isabella's will might not actually reflect what she wanted. They considered the fact that she had changed her power of appointment, like we talked about before.
They tried to make their decision fit with what they thought Isabella would have wanted.
Right. They weren't just blindly applying a rule. They were trying to make a decision that actually made sense given the situation.
This whole purposive approach seems a lot more flexible.
Yeah.
And maybe fairer, right? Yeah. It lets courts kind of adapt to changing times, to new technology, to all sorts of things that the original law might not have considered.
Absolutely. It's about keeping the law relevant, making sure it reflects how people actually live their lives.
It all makes a lot of sense, Teddy. But wouldn't this approach, wouldn't it make the law a little less predictable? I mean, if judges have more freedom to interpret things, wouldn't that lead to different rulings in similar cases?
Yeah, that's definitely a concern. And, you know, legal experts debate it all the time. But the people who support this purpose of interpretation, they argue that predictability shouldn't be the only goal of the legal system.
So there are other things to consider, like fairness and the ability to adapt to new situations.
Right. It's about finding a balance. We want the law to be predictable, of course, but we also want it to be able to evolve as the world changes.
It's like we need a legal system that's stable, but not stuck in the past.
Exactly. While this purpose of interpretation might make things a little less certain, it also gives courts the power to make decisions that are more nuanced, more just, especially in tricky cases like Beals with its powers of appointment.
That makes sense. So with this shift toward purposive interpretation, does this change how lawyers think about estate planning? Like when they're drafting wills and trusts, are they doing things differently?
It definitely has implications for how we approach things. Being clear and precise is still incredibly important, but we also need to think about the bigger picture, you know? How might things change in the future? We have to write documents that are solid legally, but can also adapt to things we might not be able to predict.
So it's not enough to just follow the rules, dot your I's and cross your T's. You have to create documents that can kind of bend and flex with the times, with the intentions of the people involved.
That's it. It takes a really deep understanding, not just of the law itself, but of human behavior, families, how inheritance works. It's complicated.
So lawyers need to be thinking ahead, anticipating what could go wrong, and making sure the documents really reflect what their clients want, even years down the line.
Exactly. And probably most importantly, it's about having really open and honest conversations with clients, explaining the implications of different approaches. helping them create an estate plan that truly fits their needs and their family situation.
So it's not just about being a legal expert. It's about being able to connect with people, understand their goals, and guide them through a process that can be really emotional and difficult.
You got it. Estate planning isn't just about money and documents. It's about people, families, and what they leave behind. It's a privilege to work in a field where we can combine our expertise with empathy to help people navigate these important decisions.
It's a good reminder that even though we've been focusing on this specific case, Beals v. State Street Bank, there's always a human story behind it. It might seem like just a legal technicality, but it opens up this bigger conversation about how the law is changing and the importance of honoring what people intended.
It really does. And what I find so interesting is that it challenges us to rethink our assumptions about the law, to embrace this more nuanced, purposive approach that puts people at the center of everything.
It's been really interesting digging into Beals v. State Street Bank, you know, exploring all the ins and outs of these powers of appointment and how courts are starting to think differently about estate law. But as cool as the legal stuff is, I keep thinking about the people involved.
Yeah, that's so important. These aren't just abstract cases. They're about real families dealing with some pretty heavy stuff.
Totally. I mean, think about Isabella's family, the people trying to sort everything out after she passed. There had to be so much confusion, maybe some anger even, with this huge inheritance at stake.
It makes you realize how much emotion is tied up in these legal decisions. It's not just about the money, it's about people's hopes, what they expect to happen, and sometimes, unfortunately, being let down.
It really highlights how important communication is in estate planning. Like, what if Arthur Hunnewell, when he was setting up the trust, sat down with Isabella and really spelled out what he intended with that power of appointment?
Right, or if Isabella had been more open with her family about her wishes, they could have avoided all this confusion and legal fighting.
It's like, families need to be able to talk about this stuff, even though it's hard. It's about death, about inheritance, things people don't always want to discuss.
It can be super uncomfortable, for sure. But those conversations, even if they're awkward, can save so much heartache down the line.
Absolutely. It's about being open and honest, and making a state, planning a family effort instead of keeping everything secret.
It's a good reminder for us as lawyers, too. We need to go beyond just knowing the law. We have to be good communicators, helping our clients have these tough conversations and creating plans that really work for their families.
We have to be more than just lawyers. We have to be counselors, mediators, even therapists sometimes, helping people through this whole emotional process.
Well said. It's about recognizing that estate planning is about so much more than just assets and legal documents. It's about people, their relationships, the legacy they want to leave behind. And we have the privilege of helping them create that legacy in a way that honors their wishes and keeps their families together.
That's beautifully put. You know, Beals v. State Street Bank might seem like a case about a small legal technicality, but it's so much bigger than that. It reminds us that law is really about people, about their connections, and about doing our best to make sure their intentions are carried out.
It really does. And it pushes us to think beyond the rigid rules, to see the human side of things, to embrace this more nuanced approach to law that recognizes that every situation is different, every family is unique, and every individual deserves to have their voice heard.
And that's what makes estate planning so fascinating, right?
Yeah.
It's not just about dry legal concepts. It's about real life, real emotions, and real families. And in the end, that's what truly matters.
Absolutely. It's about helping people navigate one of the most important and often overlooked aspects of life. And it's a responsibility we don't take lightly.
Well said. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Beals v. State Street Bank. We hope this has given you a lot to think about, both in terms of the law and the human impact behind it.
And remember, this is just one case, one story among countless others. There's always more to learn, more to explore in this ever-evolving field of estate planning. So keep those legal minds sharp, keep your hearts open, and never stop seeking a deeper understanding of the law and the people it affects.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you on the next deep dive.